sometimes they're not truthful and the experiences or skill sets that they have that we're looking for, right? If I'm looking for someone that has, for example, an IT background in our custom platform, we had someone that said, yeah, I have really good experience. They checked our back end. They said some really good things that made them sound so experienced. And when it came time, you know, we hired them, they weren't able to perform. And so when that happens, you have to terminate and move on quickly.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing today?
I am doing really, really good. Joe, I want you to tell everybody, what was the most popular episode of the Quiet Light Podcast back in 2018?
This is just an intro to tell people that you have the majority of the top 10 episodes. I think that's what that's all about, because the top one is Shaquille Prasla. You did the interview with him and you had him back on, right?
That's right. Yeah. And it really is. It's just me trying to make myself feel good.
I pulled stats on the top 20 and we're even at 50-50, but I don't think that's very impressive because I knew you were going to bring that up on this call today. So I was hoping to have something much more impressive. Like you had the majority of the top 20, but I had the 80% of the top 20, but it's not the case at all.
But you know what? You hold the records that count at Quiet Light, such as largest deal closed and most transactions. So you can rest easy with those.
Fortunately, we've got people that are incredible coming up, like Walker and Chuck and Brad. So those records will be shattered by all three of those in the future someday.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the podcast here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's why we're here. Shaquille Prasla, most popular episode that we've recorded in the year and a half that we've been doing the Quiet Light podcast now. And the title of that episode was How to Buy Multiple Businesses Without Going Insane. If you haven't listened to it, go back, take a listen to it. Really interesting podcast episode. Shaquille, at that time, had bought 8 businesses in 2 years. And unlike RJ, who we talked about with 101 Commerce, who had a whole system and team built up, Shaquille kind of did this and grew this organically, right? He started buying these businesses organically. He started as a buyer and owner-operator and has moved out into a different format. Now, in that first podcast, we talked a lot about how was he getting the financing. We talked a little bit about how he was structuring this as well to keep his time just in check, because 8 businesses is a lot. But we didn't get into the heart of the matter, which is how is he actually going through and managing all these businesses. And the trick to it, really, at the end of the day, the trick to it is hiring CEOs. He hires a CEO during the acquisition process. So while he's in due diligence, he goes out and he finds somebody who's going to run that business. Now, the number one question that I've gotten from that episode, and I've talked to people afterwards, is not funding questions, but where does he find these CEOs and how does he structure that so that it works? So I decided to have Shaquille back, and he was super gracious with his time. You know, I was really worried about him giving away company secrets and everything. And Shaquille, just like he does, just said, yeah, no company secrets. I'm happy to share whatever, you know, let's just talk about it and see what we can do to help people. And that's what this episode is, how to hire a CEO to run your business.
That's great. You know, we have dozens of folks that have the idea to buy and build a portfolio of online businesses, and Shaquille has done it. He did it before most people were talking about it, and he's done it successfully. So I think it's a great episode to re-air or have somebody back and talk about it in detail. Looking forward to listening to this myself.
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right. So the most popular episode that we've had on the Quiet Light podcast over the past 15 months that we've been doing this now, I think, came when I had a conversation with you, Shaquille, and we talked about your somewhat insanity of buying multiple businesses. And at that time, you had bought 8 businesses over 2 years. So we titled the episode, How to Buy Multiple Businesses Without Going Insane. We talked about just kind of the high level stuff about what you were doing. We focused a little bit on how you were acquiring these businesses and putting people in place to run them from day one. But we also talked and probably spent more time on how you were financing these acquisitions as well. Well, again, this is by far the most downloaded episode that we've had over the Quiet Light podcast history. And the number one question I get when I talk to people about the podcast and your episode comes up is how you're hiring CEOs. And I'm going to step back a little bit and just say, look, since I've been an entrepreneur and since I sold my first business now a gazillion years ago, I've received this question. Why didn't you just hire somebody to run the business for you and live off the cash flow? And it's this nice, trite, sort of quaint phrase that we like to tell people, hey, just put somebody in place to run the business. But the devil's always in the execution, right? How do you actually do that? How do you find somebody? How do you pay somebody for that? How do you set up a system that is still working? And at the end of the day, how do you manage CEOs? So thanks for coming on board, back on here, defending your number one title. Maybe you can get number one, number two. And let's start to delve into some of this. Thanks again for coming on. Let's start with a very easy question. Last time we talked, which was a year ago, you had 8 companies. What is that ticker count up to now?
Yeah, so now we're at 12 companies now and still aggressively acquiring companies. Now we're acquiring the larger deals, so any company that's making at least $500,000 and seller's discretionary earnings is what we're aiming for now. So we're definitely going for the larger companies. When I initially started, it was kind of getting my feet wet, get some little businesses, get the cash flow going. And, you know, along the way, wanted to start acquiring larger companies. Yeah. And here I am now.
Yeah. So now it's not just you doing this now, right? You do have a few people together working together on this, right?
Yeah. So as you get larger, you don't want to... your risk exposure gets higher. And so what I've done is I've partnered with a few folks in Houston as well that were all already in the e-commerce game. And so what that does is things that I lack or where I become the bottleneck, that's where my partners excel. And so it's been a great sort of marriage in that my weaknesses are their strengths. And so the way I met them was they're part of my community, but we were part of this Facebook group and we're making introductions and stuff. And Pervez Panjwani introduced himself saying, hey, I'm in e-commerce. And so I messaged him. I'm like, hey, I'm in e-commerce too. We should meet up. This is 5 years ago. And we met up for coffee and we brainstormed ideas. And I was like, hey, I'm acquiring companies. You want to partner up and buy something larger? At this point, I didn't even know this guy, right? But like, yeah, let's do this. We had no partnership agreements in place, nothing like that. But the trust factor was there. The friendship was there. And so we're able to, break that off or get that going. And so we've been able to acquire much larger companies since then.
That's awesome. So up to 12, you're still not insane. Well, I mean, you might feel like you're going insane at some points, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a few days ago, I had to color my beard as well. You could see it, but it's getting white. It's definitely a different mindset you need to have to be able to run multiple companies. You're not able to do everything for each of the companies, right? So you have to focus on the high level growth goals, 2 or 3 things for each company, and that's it. Everything else, everything small, tedious, has to be done by the rest of the team.
Right, right. You know, I often look at people like Elon Musk, right? Obviously kind of a figurehead, especially for entrepreneurs. I know a lot of entrepreneurs look at him and you look at the fact that he's got how many companies, and it's not like these companies are doing quote unquote small things. I guess our companies in comparison would be doing small things compared to what he's doing, right? He's literally sending people to space, digging tunnels under the ground. And the question is, how in the world can you possibly do it? But it's that idea of let's focus on the big things and only get into the weeds and the details where necessary. It comes down to having those right people in place. Again, the number one question I got from your episode last time was the idea that you're hiring CEOs. So let's start with this first. When you're looking to acquire a company, and I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, I would assume that you're always looking to put a CEO in place whenever you're doing an acquisition. Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing is, when I buy a business, I'm not trying to buy a full-time job either. And so the strategy I use is when I make an offer on the business and submit an LOI, at that point, I know I want to buy the business. So while doing due diligence, at the same time, I am looking for a CEO. And the process of that, usually due diligence, if it's 30 to 45 days, or if it's SBA, it'll take a little longer. But during that whole process of due diligence, I actually go find the CEO, you know, in 20 to 30 days, and bring them on at the tail end of due diligence. And so the future CEO gets to kind of see the process, gets to see the operations and everything. And once I acquire the company, I keep the old owner on always, whether it's a consulting agreement or whatever, at least for 2 months. And I keep them on for 2 months, the old seller, is so that way they could transfer all the knowledge to me and the new CEO in place. And what that does is it makes this transition much easier, and it empowers or gets the CEO ready to start making their own decisions for the business. So yeah, I do definitely keep a CEO in place always.
All right. So there's 1,000 questions that we can be asking off this. And I know people listening are probably asking their own questions. I hope I get to all the ones that you guys have in your heads. Let's start with, I think, one of the obvious questions, and that is, where are you finding these CEOs? I mean, how are you putting these job listings out? Are these all coming through your network? Are you just advertising on job boards? And what are you doing to attract good candidates?
Yeah. So the first thing first is you have to create the role. There has to be a need for the role. It's hard to find a CEO for a business if the business is only making, you know, $100,000 in profit, you know, because the CEO will up, depending on the caliber of the person, you'll at least need to pay him at least $50,000. So half your profits go there. So the income has to be there and the need has to be there. Second, you have to create the role, right? So with the role, I put on my job listings that, hey, you're going to be the CEO of the company. You're going to be doing everything A to Z. You're going to be doing vendor management, employee management, hiring, firing, growth goals. And so the type of people that I would look for to apply or would be a good candidate are people that have some type of project management background, some type of senior leadership background, some type of digital marketing background. That's a huge thing. A lot of people will apply with the digital marketing background. And so I guess the perfect type of person that would apply would be a digital marketer that works for agency that has VAs underneath them or that has junior assistants underneath them. You know, they have that sort of that project management role. They've worked with clients to get their goals aligned, and they have the marketing experience. So that would be a great candidate to kind of fill that CEO role. Where do I look for them? You know, I go to a lot of conferences. I go to a lot of networking events. I talk to a lot of people. Podcasts like these help too. And so there's a lot of people reaching out to me. There's a lot of people I'm reaching out to through the network to just tell them, hey, I'm in e-commerce. I'm looking to hire a CEO always. Let's stay in touch. You know, so the network's one thing, but there is the job boards that also help, right? So there's LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn's a great platform. There's ZipRecruiter, which is another great platform. There's e-commerce fuel jobs. So that's specifically just for e-commerce jobs. That's a great one as well. And then there's also staffing agencies I've used where they pretty much will go to different candidates in the Austin or Houston area with people with e-commerce jobs and just message them on LinkedIn saying, hey, we have a job available. Would you guys be interested? So, you know, there's multiple ways with all these different ways of kind of attracting. And remember, you're sort of on a timeline because during this due diligence phase, it's not going to go on forever. As much as I want to have patience to find the right candidate, I don't want to be in a position where I buy the business and the CEO is now training me, or I have to bring another CEO from my other company to come in, right? That doesn't make things efficient. And so I have to be aggressive in finding someone, but I have to find the right candidate. And so I have to look everywhere. And I think these places where I talked about networking, job boards, staffing agencies, they're all going to help you find several candidates. And then the process is next. How do you identify the right CEO through all these applicants?
Right. And that's I want to get into the process a little bit here. Do you mainly hire local or are you open to hiring across the country? Or does it depend?
I'm open to hiring across the country. And so part of our listing, we also offer a job relocation bonus as well. because, you know, if I'm only going to be looking in Austin and Houston, you have a sort of that limited parameter and limited people applying. That only works with staffing agencies because they have like the local networks. But on LinkedIn, ZipRecruiter, e-commerce, Fuel, Jobs, that's nationwide. It's open to anyone. So if you're in New York City, if the position can be remote, we'll keep it remote. But you know, the new strategy we're going for now is just keeping everything in-house, getting everyone to the headquarters. We could brainstorm easily, but we would give a relocation bonus to come to our headquarters in Houston.
So do you have like this headquarters in Houston? Do you have all these CEOs coming into one office complex?
Yep. Yep. So we have a nice sized office there where we have our CEOs. So each CEO has its own little office. Every Tuesday or Thursday, that's when our weekly meetings are. We will have weekly meetings with the CEO. And then once a month, we also have a meeting with all the CEOs. So if a CEO for one business has a certain strategy, they'll share those. If something's not working out for another strategy, they'll share those as well. So it's a nice collaboration of sharing strategies. And then we also have what I call a shared back office, which is our content folks. We have our design team. We have our SEO specialists. We have our ad guys as well too. So we have that shared resources across all the platforms, which all the CEOs and companies are able to utilize as well. And that's in the headquarters, Houston.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about pay, because one thing I look at with this is you hear CEO and I think really expensive. Sounds like you said that you started as low as $50,000 for that. Are people actually responding to that sort of a pay scale?
Yeah, I mean, the higher the salary, the higher the caliber folks. This all comes back to how much the company's making. Like if you know, I'll give you an example. One of our companies, I think when we bought it, was making $300,000. I'm not able to afford $150,000 a year person just based off that, right? So it depends on how much the business is making. But yeah, our CEOs make anywhere from 50 to well over six figures, 50,000 to well over six figures in salary.
And then do you work on different bonus structures as well? So kind of a salary plus a bonus?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, you want to incentivize these folks to treat it like their own business, right? There's a reason why they're not starting their own business, right? There's always that thought in the back of my mind that, or even others, is why don't they just go start their own company? And at the end of the day, you know, some folks like a steady income versus business cash flows that are not steady, right? So there's that one aspect. To answer your question, the incentives. So yeah, our CEOs do have incentives. We do multiple incentives. One of them is, so besides salary, you get an incentive based off the profit of the business. So we used to do top line incentives, top line growth, but it wasn't helping our bottom line either, right? You could spend a bunch of money on Google AdWords or Facebook and grow the top line, but does that mean you're growing the bottom line? So our CEOs have access to QuickBooks, our financials. They get to see how the business is doing. So they get a percentage of the profit. That's one incentive. Number two is we do what it's called an anniversary bonus. So if they've stayed on for 1 year, they get a bonus. If they stayed on for 2 years, they get a bonus, you know, and 3 years and so on. And the reason for that is you're spending so much time with these folks to train them, get them on board, learn the business. And if they're really good, you don't want them to walk away. So you kind of give them that little incentive to keep staying on for those anniversary bonuses. And then we also have another bonus where if we sell the company, they get part of the sell price as well. So that's another incentive for them to stay towards the end, right? My goal is not to keep all the companies forever. It's to sell the whole portfolio to a larger buyer.
Sure. So when you're working out these incentives, sounds like one of the incentives is just the bottom line profits of the company. And I would assume certain growth percentages there, either just a flat percentage or maybe if you get this much growth. Do you work with CEOs to identify maybe other metrics that would be important to grow within the company, whether that be more efficiency in ad spend or anything else? Or do you try and keep it just simple, let's focus on the profits?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'll clarify that they do get profit sharing, but it's based off the growth of the company. And so, you know, I'm not trying to, I mean, the goal is definitely to grow the company. So, you know, the higher the business grows, it's a tiered incentive, right? So the more the business grows, the more they make as well. Yeah, I apologize. What was your original question?
I'm wondering about the different bonus structures that you set up for them. So, you know, I know we had Bill D'Alessandro on recently, and I know he incentivizes some of his people based off of other metrics as well, right? So he's looking at maybe some of these deeper metrics. And I know with like a Quiet Light brokerage, one of the metrics that we measure here are conversations. It's a really simple sort of thing that we look at to say how many conversations are we having, because we know that drives the rest of our business. Do you do that with your CEOs, or do you try and keep it just simple and say, let's focus on the profits? You can worry about identifying what's going to drive those profits.
That's a great question. My only incentive is the bottom line, because everything that you do, improving conversions, to making ad spend more efficient, to making operations more efficient, to making it more lean, everything adds back to the bottom line. And that's what it comes back to. So, you know, part of our weekly meetings is we look at where are we being inefficient? Where are we spending too much? Where is our ads, the return on ad spend too high, right? And we identify those and we lower those, because at the end of the day, as we're being more efficient, it should lead to a better bottom line. And that is extra money going into the CEO's pocket. So yeah, my only incentive is definitely the bottom line.
When you're looking to hire a CEO, how much emphasis do you put on them being able to understand that business model? And I guess maybe that some of that would come from who you're hiring and knowing their background. But let's say that you're selling red wagons, you know, red radio flyer wagons. Do you look for somebody who is familiar with the toy industry at all? Is that really a concern of yours? Or are you looking more just generic e-commerce experience?
And that's a great question. And that's the thought process I have too, is if I bought a socks company, I want to make sure that they're sort of familiar with the industry. But at the end of the day, it's pretty hard to find those kind of niche focused people. And so that is something, it's a plus, it's preferred. If I don't find that, then I'm okay with something else. As long as they understand the model, as long as they understand e-commerce and digital advertising and management, learning the product or the industry is sort of secondhand. You know, it becomes, if you have the skill sets of what I just mentioned, learning the product isn't going to be hard for them. And so, yes, it's preferred, but not required.
Okay, I'm going to ask another question. And if I'm getting too detailed, and you know, I know that you've built something that works really well, and I don't want you to necessarily have to give away company secrets and everything. So feel free to gloss over this if needed. You brought up something that I thought was interesting and something that I want to get into in a little bit here. And that's the idea that why wouldn't these people just start up a business on their own? And the answer, you answered your own question. You said, well, they prefer that steady income. They like to have that steady income. So when I'm looking at this mix of steady income, kind of a base salary plus a bonus structure on top of that, do you find that there's a sweet spot in there of mixing those two things together? I think people inherently like the idea of a bonus. You know, it's out there as like this nice frosting on top of the cake. But is there a balance point? Obviously, you can't be 100% performance based, because if you were, then these people would be like, well, forget it. I'm going to go do it all on my own. Do you find there's a sweet spot there? Is it based off a percentage, or is it based off there's just kind of a floor to the amount of money that somebody needs to make before they can really be incentivized? And then the business tells the rest of the story as to how the bonuses should work. I don't know if that question makes any sense or not, but.
No, it does. And again, there's no secrets to anything I do. It's just a process that we've really refined. Whenever we look at a lot of candidates, even, you know, folks working with us, even people that have applied, it's definitely the people that have applied. It's, first of all, it's hard to be an entrepreneur. You're not working an 8-to-5 job Monday to Friday. You're working every single day. So having that mindset, first of all, is hard. Not everyone can do it. But people are okay to work for entrepreneurs, learn from them as well. And the different part about me is I don't expect these guys to work for 10 years for me. My goal is a 3-year sort of timeline. And you know, I'm pretty open with you know everyone too. It's just we're looking to grow aggressively for the next 3 years and then just sell. And so in their back of the mind, you know, they're going to try, what they try to do is learn as much as they can in the next 3 years and stay on. And then want, hopefully when we sell, they also get a bonus there, right? So it's definitely, you have to have the right mindset. It's hard to be an entrepreneur. It's hard to work every single day, staying up late at night. And then number two, it comes back to the pay as well. You know, and I look at so many businesses and stuff. What if, you know, if you're getting a lot of traffic from Google, what if you get a Google update? Your income now is slashed, right? How are you going to pay for your house? How are you going to pay for your family? That's just the stress that a lot of people do not want to have. They want to have a fixed income, right? And so we offer, our salaries, you know, are very competitive, especially for our larger companies. They're very well compensated. And then the bonus is just the cherry on top. It's just for them to show us that they're really into this for this growth. And so as they grow the company, the valuation of the company goes up. And so I definitely want them to have the upside on that as well. So your salary has to be good enough just in case the incentives are not met, right? They have to not only live off it, but be happy with it as well.
All right, cool. Let's get into managing the employees, because this is the second half of this question. Managing the CEOs, I should say. This is the second half of the question. One, obviously, is how do you find these people? How do you compensate these people? You know, that upfront sort of process. The back end of it is once you have all these people in place, and it sounds like you have multiple now, you know, probably 10 or maybe a dozen CEOs, managing the CEOs on a regular basis. And that's not a small feat by any means. You already alluded to it a little bit, but let's go over it again. You do meetings every Tuesday with those that are local and then once a month for everybody all together?
Correct.
Okay. And then how often do you check in on their performance of their company? So is that a monthly task? Do you meet with them individually? How does that work?
Yeah, so we look at the numbers every week, actually. And so we use a template which it shows month over month growth, week over week growth, year over year growth. And then it's broken down by where the revenue is coming from, how much we're spending on ads, what our conversion rate is, any notable achievements in the last week, any disappointments, any customers that walked away. So we have like this template, this checklist, which the CEOs have to fill out every week. And that's what our meeting is based off of.
Okay. So you meet with them weekly. Well, let's ask the uncomfortable question, the one that is kind of in the back of my head. I was saving it, but I'll ask it now. What do you do with poor performers?
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm not going to make this sound, you know, easy or anything. This is when you buy a company, you're investing your own money and now you're trusting someone else to run that for you, pretty much making sure that they make sure that your investments work out, right? That's really hard to do. As entrepreneurs, we try to hog all the work. It's true. Like you do what you do the best. I do what I'm doing the best. But at the end of the day, you have to let go of that, those tasks, those powers. And when you start to do that, you start to be able to delegate these tasks much easier. I haven't started these businesses from the scratch. It's easier for me to empower these folks to sort of go do these tasks, right? If it's someone that's starting off, they've been doing everything, customer service, graphic designing, you know, SEO, everything. So it gets a little harder when you have started something, but when you buy something, it's a little easier to let go of those tasks. As far as poor performance, yeah, we've had CEOs that have not done well. You know, when you're interviewing someone, you try to build that relationship with them, you try to build that trust with them, and their job is to sell themselves, and they do a really good job, right? Sometimes they're not sometimes they're not truthful and the experiences or skill sets that they have that we're looking for, right? If I'm looking for someone that has, for example, an IT background in our custom platform, we had someone that said, yeah, I have really good experience. They checked our back end. They they said some really good things that made them sound so experienced. And when it came time, you know, we hired them, they weren't able to perform. And so when that happens, you know, you have to terminate and move on quickly. And one thing I forgot to mention is my CEOs, this ranges, but we always do a contract basis first. So this is called a trial period where for 3 months, we get to sort of feel each other out to make sure this works for you and for me. We want to make sure that our goals are aligned. And so during that trial period, I'm able to really tell me and my partners, is this guy going to work out or not? So yeah, sometimes they don't work out and we do fire them and we have to move on to the next person quickly.
Are the CEOs this 3 month trial period, after the 3 months, is their pay guaranteed after that?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So that 3 months is really important for you guys to be able to do that. If you have to let a CEO go after those 3 months, are you looking for a CEO in month two because you know that you're going to be replacing them?
That's where stress happens quite often, right? Now, you had this whole plan of transferring knowledge. Remember, from the seller to the CEO, you're going to be dependent on the CEO to running, you know, working 40 hours a week. Now, what happens when there's no CEO and, you know, you have a seven-figure revenue business and all these customers, employees, supplier relationships? Who are they supposed to go to? So that's where one of us partners will have to step in. Or the CEOs that are with us right now, they're amazing. They're really good folks and they understand our systems well. So temporarily, we may have to kind of make the CEO, one of our other CEOs, come in place of this one just to work a little bit as well while we look for someone else. Or we may reach back out to the old seller and say, hey, let's kick in our consulting agreement. We'll pay you whatever it is to run the company while we look for someone else. Because remember, this is during the 3 month process. We haven't had anyone leave after the 3 month process. And that's what makes this kind of system work flawlessly right now.
So you brought this earlier on. Why wouldn't these people start their own business on their own? And I know I've had some early on in Quiet Late Days when I would hire a broker, because I hire entrepreneurs. A lot of these guys look at the deal flow and they're like, dude, I want to buy these businesses myself. And I've actually had a couple of them back out so that they could pursue other ventures. Have you had CEOs after they've run the business for a little bit, whether in a friendly way or maybe not so friendly way, either compete or end up leaving?
So fortunately, I have not. However, that thought is always in my mind. And, you know, as much as I want to reason with it saying, you know, people want to fix salary, people want to take on the risk, they can leave. I mean, they can leave at any time. They've learned so much, you know, through these acquisitions we've done, through all these systems we've built. They're very capable of starting their own business. They're running our business. So yeah, that thought is there. Luckily, we haven't had that happen yet. But if it does happen, that's unfortunate. But we do have really strong SOPs in place too, where if someone were to leave, it's me and three other partners. So there's four of us. And so we'll just jump in and run the show. And so that's what's helpful with a big organization now is I could pull in a CEO, I could pull in a partner if someone were to leave.
What about some of the great success stories that you've had with your CEOs? It sounds like, let's start with that. How long is the longest tenured CEO been with you? How long have they been with you?
You know, so when I first started buying acquisitions, Mark, I was buying them for cash flows. I was running them myself. I think the first three I was running myself. And then I think I bought my fourth one 2015. So that's when I first hired my CEO and he's still here. So, you know, I got into e-commerce 5 years ago, hired my first CEO in 2015. So three years. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And out of these, are you able to share maybe the greatest success story of growth that you've had with one of your properties?
Yeah. This was actually a company I bought from you guys, from Amanda. It's called metalpromo.com. We make metal promotional items, coins, pins, metal business cards. It was doing, I think when we bought it, it was doing $600,000 in sales. And We bought, so that was the business we bought in 2015. And so that's, you know, that's 10x now. And when we bought the company, it was just a mess. It was, you know, it's dealing with different suppliers. It's not having any quality assurance in place because these are custom products. It's made in China, you know, shipped directly to our customer, 10 to 12 days lead time. There's just nothing, you know, in it to make sure that everything goes well. So we were able to refine the process, grow the company through really good SEO and AdWords strategy. And, you know, at that time, we had a team of 2015. Now we're a team of 20. And so that was a great success story. The CEO, he's a partner as well, William. He's amazing. And the unique part about him was we went to MBA program together. He had no e-commerce experience at all, but he had a drive for success. And because I knew him and he was a good friend, you know, we decided to partner up. It was you know, a little smaller acquisition at that time. And man, things worked out really well. And he's running the show. He's happy. I mean, he's, you know, we're both getting paid really well from the company. So yeah, thank you, Amanda, for that deal. But it's, you know, that's a great success story.
Yeah, I have a theory that you only buy from Texans because you've bought multiple businesses from Amanda. In fact, I'm trying to think if you bought any businesses through us that have not been through Amanda. I think they've all been through Amanda.
Yeah, well, working on one deal right now through one of your other guys, so hopefully that works out.
Well, hopefully. Amanda's one of those ones. I mean, she's a little bit quieter at Quiet Light. She doesn't come on the podcast and stuff. We're working to get her on the podcast, but... man, she's effective. All right, one last question. I've been taking up a lot of your time now. I mean, we're on a half an hour, so a little bit more than a half hour here. But you guys have this shared back-end office here with content writers and other people doing other sort of work. Do you ever run into conflicts between the CEOs when it comes to those shared resources? Do you have any way of allotting those resources on the back end?
So that's a really good question. Yes, we do run into issues sometimes because when all the companies are on growth kind of mode, you want to utilize certain people more than the others. And so then that resource becomes a bottleneck. Then we have to go hire someone. But during that process, we do have a Trello board that we use that basically shows what that specific employee is working on. So if it's content writer, right? Our content writer can do so much. Articles a week, right? So we have this calendar as well, sort of built in Trello where it shows, all right, December 25th to December 31st, they're going to be working on this property, so on and so forth. So it is a sort of a tug and war, so to speak there. We do run into a little bit of problems, but I always consider that good problems because we need these resources. We'll just continue hiring until we don't have a bottleneck.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So, all right, I think I asked all the questions on my list here. And I know there's probably people in their car screaming, well, you didn't ask about this question. And I apologize for that. So I'm going to have two things here to end. First of all, what question didn't I ask that you think people should know about hiring CEOs?
So I think first thing first is you have to have the correct mindset. As I said before, it's hard to trust someone with your business when it's worth, you know, let's just say millions of dollars, right? And it's, if they do one small mistake, if they piss off one of our suppliers, you sort of cut off that relationship, right? So you're really trusting this person to do a good job. So definitely do a good job of trying to find that person. If you have time, use that time, be patient. If you don't, do a series of tests with them to make sure you hire the a good CEO. Do personality tests. Do a bunch of phone calls. If they're not in your city, fly them in. Get to know them. Go to casual dinners. You want to see how that person interacts, how they are off the business as well. So definitely get to know that person really well. And number two, as I said, the mindset has to be there. You have to be willing to empower these folks. You cannot micromanage anyone if you want to grow. You know, when you want multiple companies, you cannot focus on the small things. Yes, sometimes the small mistakes will happen. When you want to step in and fix it, you're going to have to actually step back and let it sort of absorb the situation. You have to let it kind of fix itself. One thing I think I'm really good at is I empower these folks. So I will intentionally, if they have a question on Skype, email, I intentionally will take my time to respond to majority of these questions so they could go figure it out themselves. They could go ask the supplier. They could go ask our customer service reps. They could go look it up. And it's because I want, it's a mindset I want them to have to go figure these things out themselves. Because one of the main reasons why I have these CEOs in place is because I want to be able to relax, you know, acquire these companies, make the money work for me, but also just go on vacations. And if I'm always just working in the business, that kind of defeats the purpose of having the CEO in place.
Yeah, I think that balance, you've said this several times, that balance of empowering somebody to run the business and the idea that as entrepreneurs, we're not very good at this. And I can totally relate with that. And I bet a lot of people out there who are entrepreneurs can relate with this as well. It's very, very difficult, like you said, to take that step back and to say, "This, I'm going to let you do it." I know in the episode with Bill D'Alessandro, listening to him speak, he talks about the comfort that he has knowing that there are people that he's paying to obsess about one particular aspect of his business day in and day out. You know, and that is something that I think as you scale up and grow up into more businesses, you realize that you can't obsess about every detail about everything that you own. There's just not enough time to put that mental bandwidth into the business. And that's got to be, I mean, is that a skill that you think that you've grown better at, or is this something that you think that you're pretty naturally good at, this idea of being able to empower and take that step back?
It was something I had to sort of self-groom myself into. It's because my initial few acquisitions, I was doing everything myself. And it's, you know, it becomes stressful at the end of the day. So I'm pretty obsessed with processes and procedures and SOPs and stuff. So I have well built out SOPs in place where, yes, the CEO has it, but it became, you had to train yourself to be able to let go of certain things. And so now I've become better at it. Remember, I understand, like, you know, as entrepreneurs, we want to hog everything up. That's the thing. It's a natural thing to do. That's just why we're good entrepreneurs. But at the same time, you do have to step back and let other people do these tasks so you could focus on the high level goals. So you could focus on acquiring bigger customers, bigger companies as well.
Fascinating. All right. So the second way I want to end here is, if people have questions that I didn't ask, how can they reach you? And I'm going to just throw in here a quick asterisk and just let people know, look, please be respectful of your time. You're always very generous with your time. And I definitely appreciate that. I know you talk at conferences now and you've come on our podcast twice. But, you know, if you have questions for Shaquille, you know, give them straight to the point. How can people reach you with any questions that maybe I missed?
Yeah, so just feel free to email me at Shaquille, S-H-A-K-I-L, at proclickventures.com.
We'll include that in the show notes. You can go to the Quiet Light Brokerage page and you'll be able to see that on there. You're always respectful with your time, and I really do, generous with your time, I should say. I really do appreciate that very, very much. And if somebody's out there who's been thinking about maybe buying, but they hear this and think, you know what, maybe it'd be better if I actually took that intermediate step and became a CEO. Are you open to hearing from those people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're in acquisition mode. We're always acquiring companies, and we're always looking for talented individuals that could run these companies. So yeah, if anyone out there is interested in sort of this role, definitely reach out, please.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you get a flood of resumes from that, and maybe a couple of good candidates as well. Thank you so much for coming back on, talking about this fascinating topic, and I have a feeling this is going to jump towards the top of the charts again.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Mark, for having me. See you in a few weeks.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. For those that don't know, that's going to be E-Commerce Fuel Live, right?
Yep.
All right. Very good. See you then.
All right. Take care, Mark. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.